to thank Sakis for having the idea of presenting something from my work, but also a bit more general than what I actually do, on the occasion of my visit to Toronto, and Jean-Paul for assisting with for with the organization of all this, and the European Union Center of Excellence here at York for hosting me, and all of you for being here at, amidst what I understand is your exam period, and probably things don't go as they usually do. Two things before I start. One is that this was a challenge when Sakis first proposed to speak about my research here today. I was not from the beginning exactly sure what to present, because one option would be to present on something specific coming out from recent or ongoing research focusing on a particular topic or a particular aspect of migration to Greece. But I thought it might be more interesting to try and give a general overview, distancing myself from the more specifics of empirical studies on specific topics or aspects of related phenomena and so on, and take a more macro historical perspective of how things have changed over the last 20-25 years since when Greece has become an immigration country. It's a fairly new phenomenon and still unfolding in many ways. And to put it in the context of the reasons why Greece is in the international headlines recently, that is the context of an escalating economic crisis in the country. And obviously, this makes me not very confident of what I'm going to present in that respect, because I will try to build on all past readings and research, but read them in view of very recent developments, which are still unfolding in many respects, and without clear signs of where this is actually going to from here. This is the one thing. The other thing I'd like to say before I kick off is that I have a terrible problem with time, so if I sort of reach some limits, it would be nice to just stop me and leave some time for discussion, questions, and so on, if I will be able to provoke some of your interest. There's also a slight change in my title, the one that was advertised, thanks to Jean-Paul, though not so much on the content, because I think that this small addition to the title adds a bit more to the general mood of what I'm going to present of the Greek migration experience over the last 20 years, for reasons that I'm going to explain shortly. And although it might sound catchy, it's not vague of meaning. As I see it, the idea is to reflect on the title, the sort of shift in the negative, mostly dimensions of hegemonic public discourse on migration and immigrants in Greece, reflecting not only a shift in migratory trends in the country, migratory trends as such, but mostly a transformation of the political, economic, societal context, and hence a change, if I'm allowed to say metaphorically, in the general mood within Greek society at large. So when mass immigration turned Greece into a de facto receiving country, one of the new destinations within the European Union for international migrants in the beginning of the 90s, more or less, prosperity and optimism were in the air. Greece exhibited among the highest growth rates in the EU. The economy was apparently booming. Consumer spending was fast growing, and so on. This went on throughout the 90s and in my view reached a peak with a successful, though much questioned in terms of its economic legacy, public spending, debt and so on, Olympic Games in 2004. And since then, the times of prosperity and optimism have gradually faded out, giving way to growing problems which were brought to the fore with the global financial crisis of 2008. This domestic dead end, in political and societal terms, was expressed internally with a violent youth insurrection in 2008. And less than a year later, Greece was proved to be the weakest link in the Eurozone, in the Eurozone's debt crisis. The story since is probably known to some of you, at least, since the country's economic difficulties have been in the headlines internationally. A combination of deepening recession and harshening austerity measures that have marked the country's situations over the last couple of years, and with the latter partly at least as feeding the former, as some analysts would argue. So how does migration enter this picture? Over the same period, more or less, since the mid of 2000s of the decade, there occurs a radical shift in migratory trends. That is, from migrants coming throughout the 90s, predominantly from the Balkans and the former Soviet Union and other countries of the former Eastern Bloc, to work mostly in Greece. After 2005, or more or less since then, new waves originate mostly from Asian and African countries, in their majority transiting through Greece towards some other Western European, Northern European state. By the end of the decade, Greece had become the main port of entry for migrants to the EU, as over 85% of all newcomers to the EU are estimated to arrive through Greek borders. So the first part of my title there, the Defenseless Vineyard, from the fenceless vineyard to the sinking boat, intends to capture this shift. Back in the beginning of the 90s, Greece was for the first time exposed to what could be briefly and very generally described as the forces of globalization, of which migration was the most visible, the most tangible face, aspect. The economy needed their work, but the massive and sudden arrival of hundreds of thousands of people from the countries of the collapsing Eastern Bloc stimulated reactions over the issue of border controls. References to the fenceless vineyard were common in public discourse back then and depicted exactly this, that too many had come to work in our prosperous vineyard, but their arrival was largely uncontrolled, hence the expression reacts to immigration because it violates national sovereignty. And this was reflected on policy initiatives on the time as well. I'll try to say a bit about this more specifically later on. On the other hand, in the last couple of years, the dominant discourse is centered around the country's economic situations at present and how new waves are making this worse. The argumentation is sort of no, and it's repeated in the recent Greek experience, ongoing Greek experience as well. They compete with locals for allegedly compete with locals for scarcer and scarcer jobs. Their presence causes drops in real wages. They boost the informal economy. They bring illnesses, as it was recently in the media said by the lips of a health minister of the country. They're involved in crime and so on. The boat is sinking. Too many illegal migrants are coming and we can't take no more. But how did it all start and how did we arrive here? What are the main features of Greece's fairly recent, though rapidly maturing experience of immigration and the settlement of migrants? And what have been the main issues at stake, how this may have changed over the past 20 years or so. So let me take you back to the main factors and developments that had conditioned Greece's transition from emigration to immigration in the first place. this is a very general sketch of what I'm going to say, mostly in talking, as an introduction. So for the most part of its history, Greece has been an emigration country. This has been written so many times from scholars studying the phenomenon in Greece or outside, and from in the press and public discourse, so many times that it may sound as a banality and actually not be that close to reality. In the sense that Greece had experienced large-scale population inflows from the very formation of the nation-state, but these were largely of people who were or were considered to be ethnically Greek. So to be more precise, Greece has been an emigration country for the biggest part of its 20th century history, and especially in the post-war decades, the post-Second World War decades. About then, I think Greeks start arriving in Canada too, in the 50s or something. But around the mid-70s, there is a turnaround in migratory trends. The country's immigration balance becomes positive for the first time, and remains so up to now. The first foreign workers come to work in the country, usually in the early 70s actually, usually on the basis of bilateral agreements with the countries of origin, such as Pakistan is coming to work in the shipbuilding industry, or Egyptians coming to work in fishing. But the net inflow at these early years is mostly due to returning Greek emigrants from abroad, mostly from closer European destinations, Western Germany, where the majority had gone. This goes on until the 80s, but there is a slight change there, as gradually the country accepts more and more migrants and asylum seekers and becomes a main country of transit of migrants crossing through Greece, as well as other Southern European countries, to enter the wealthier European states' economies. With the demise of the Iron Curtain, Greece emerges as a mass destination, especially in the beginning, but also now to a large extent, from neighboring Balkan countries. As you will see it later on, the big vast majority of immigrants in Greece originate from neighboring Albania, over half at least until later statistics that have been available. So this transition coincided with a series of developments that have also signaled processes of increasing exposure to global trends, such as, very generally, the redefinition of the regional position and role of the country in the new Balkans, the post-existing socialism or communist Balkans, the ongoing process of EU integration, the fact that Greece followed core EU countries in joining the common market, the Schengen area, the Eurozone later on, and so on. The general trends of restructuring and internationalization of the national economy through privatizations of state companies, liberalization of exchange rates, deindustrialization, and the closure or relocation of manufacturing companies abroad, mostly in the Balkans, tertiarization of the economy, and so on and so forth. Moreover, the Greek experience of transition from emigration to immigration takes place around the same period and shares common characteristics with those of other Southern European countries, in a sense that allows scholars among the early ones who studied the phenomenon, such as Russell King and others, to talk of a distinct Southern European immigration model. In fact, despite particularities, regional exceptions, and different histories, Greece, Italy, Spain, and Portugal share common contradictions that indicate a distinct path to capitalist development, perhaps more obvious in the post-war era again, reflected in similar productive and employment structures, such as with some very obvious exceptions, such as Catalonia and the Basque Country in Spain or northern Italy, obviously. Late industrialization and a fairly limited proletarization of the labor force, persisting importance of agriculture and traditional type of economic activities, a heavy reliance on tourism in recent decades, the prevalence of family micro-enterprises, high rates of self-employment, and large underground economies and widespread informal economic arrangements, to mention only some basic ones. So the region's transition from emigration to immigration altogether had been connected with a series of developments at the international, both international and the domestic level. Apart from the collapse of the obvious international effect of the collapse of the regimes in the former Eastern Europe, there was a shift around the 80s in migratory policies from the traditional post-war immigration countries of Europe. Border controls increase, more restrictions are posed into immigration, so the southern belt of Europe is gradually being transformed from a region of transit to a waiting room to a destination. And then there have been internal, to some extent common, developments, political ones such as democratization, mostly in Spain, Portugal, and Greece, not so much in Italy, an EU membership for these three countries as well, more or less the same period, first half of the 80s, economic development within the EU, of course, that led to rising prosperity gradually, to relative improvement of macroeconomic indicators, improved living standards, widening of middle classes, an expansion of tertiary education, which led to higher employment aspirations among the youth, who would enter later, fairly late, the labor market as they were able to be sustained through strong family bonds. Feminization of the labor force and the exodus of women from home, which may have caused to some degree some deficit in child and elderly care and domestic work. Decreasing and obviously demographic developments such as decreasing fertility rates and the aging of the population overall. Geography played a role as well, with the Southern Europe being in fact the external borders of the European Union, and the Mediterranean metaphorically emerging as Europe's Rio Grande, making a parallel with the North American patterns. Within which Greece obviously is perhaps more exposed to new arrivals, since it has a long and mountainous border line at the north and a long coast line with numerous islands which are difficult to patrol. It relies on open tourist economies, which again poses problems in control. And lastly, perhaps the historical and cultural bonds that some countries had with other parts of the globe, mostly colonial ties in the case of Spain and Portugal, for example, with former colonies sharing the same language or religion, and with home places of the old Greek diaspora, which attracted a component of ethnic migrants in Greece. Within this, what I've already said, maybe the second part of the slide, some of the Greek peculiarities that make its case quite exceptional within this common trajectory. Maybe first the strong Balkan dimension, which remains so, although things are changing, but was particularly evident in the beginning and for most part of these last 20, 25 years or so. And there we can see an interesting, at least from an economic point of view, dual kind of development, in the sense that at the same time that migrants are coming from the Balkans, that is, inflows of labor are arriving from the Balkans, more or less the same period, Greece becomes a net exporter of capital, an exporter of foreign direct investment. So you have inflow of labor, outflow of capital, which apparently seem to be two sides of the same coin, because this is directly precisely to the same countries where migrants come from, and more or less reflecting the same kind of economic needs. That is, it's mostly the needs of medium and small size companies relocating to the Balkans or employing migrants at home, with a strategy facing competition problems in Greece, with a strategy to decrease their labor costs, to reduce their labor costs, focusing on labor-intensive activities and so on. The second thing I've already mentioned again is the importance of ethnic migrations from the old, that is, people who have never been immigrants from the Greek state in their majority, of the old Greek diaspora, mostly in countries of the former Soviet Union, but in the Balkans as well. And their reception has been based on, has provoked a differentiation in the policy framework, which in their case included national identity considerations. It's more or less, it's very similar to, for those of you who may know, the case of, with the collapse of the Soviet Union, the Ausländer Germans who migrated from the former Soviet Union to Germany, or more obvious case, the those of Russian Jews who went back to Israel, more or less. The third is, again, the geographic position of Greece at the southeastern now corner of the EU, at the time surrounded by countries that were not in the EU, now this has changed, which made it perhaps even more vulnerable or exposed to new arrivals. This is a map, as you know, chose that big of a map purposely in order to show exactly the corner that Greece occupies on the map and its closeness to the Balkans and to main entry points like Turkey and some countries of origin as well. Let's take now a closer look, looking at some of the statistics. These are the main nationalities of foreign nationals, because that's what was recorded in the census. It's not migrants as actually defined as such, but we can make our make our assumptions based on this data, of course. And you can see the obvious weight of one single country, Albania, which is just for those not familiar with Europe, just here, very, very close. And proximity has been something that played a lot to both immigration flows, but also to processes of incorporation of immigrants in the country. Followed by other Balkan, Eastern European countries. This was the picture as in during the census of 2001. The situation might have changed to a large degree since then, and I'll try to make a case for it, although recent data from the last census are not available. In contrast to Canada, as far as I know, censuses in Europe take place every 10 years, so there is a problem with the data anyway. And these are also from the census. I don't want to confuse you with too many numbers, but just to make a couple of cases for regarding key features of the composition of the migrant population, and especially their some of their characteristics that will take me to the next stage to tell you a little bit about the labor market integration before I go on with other sort of what I consider to be the main issues. So these are there to show you, for example, in the first table, top left, what have been the stated reasons for migration for those migrants who, or foreign nationals to be more precise, who were recorded in the last census more than 10 years ago. So there I keep that about 50% or perhaps a bit more have been come in the country for reasons of employment, and a large proportion, just towards the end, after the first half of the table, stated other reasons, which mostly include this component of ethnic migrations, repatriating ethnic Greeks. That was the context that was also expressed in policy terms, with a different status, a different policy framework, and so on. If you look at the second one there in the middle, about the occupation, again you can see a more or less similar proportion, large proportion of people who were employed at the time, and also a very, the following two, a very small section who were unemployed, just 5.3% of unemployment at the time that unemployment for at the level of the whole country, based on the same kind of data, was about 10%, perhaps slightly more, but I'm not, I can't remember exactly. Then you can see very obvious concentrations in the professions blue collar and unskilled work. The proportions were petty entrepreneurs, was actually very small at the time, and slightly more for women, especially for low-skilled work in services and sales, which do not necessarily reflect, as the last table shows, the education level of the majority. There was a de-skilling sort of effect, and this is particularly true for migrants from Eastern European countries, who in general had a higher education, higher qualifications overall. Okay, just as an introduction to tell you a bit about the processes, the main issues concerning the labor market and the integration of migrants, at least what was as the picture was for the most part of the 90s, a little bit until the first half of the 2000s perhaps, summarizing what I think are the main points there. This is the first, let's say, the labor market is the first of three issues I would like to focus in the rest of the lecture. Labor market, the way the policy framework developed from the 90s to the 2000s, and the sort of general overall social stances, the public discourse on migration and immigrants in Greece. So in terms of the labor market, the arrival of immigrants responded to gaps and shortages in labor supply. This is not to say that there have not been some displacement of indigenous workforce, but this was so limited that it was almost negative in effect, also because new jobs have been created demanding migrant work and so on. And this was mostly in specific economic sectors or specific geographical regions of the country. We can later on, if we have some time for discussion, give a bit more details if you are interested in that. in posts that were left vacant, or gradually they became increasingly unpopular among again, the indigenous labor force, the 3D points to the dirty, dangerous, and something else. And demanding, I guess, manually demanding jobs that sort of picture the type of work that migrant labor performed at large, and to new needs that were related to or generated from processes of economic restructuring and social change. To give some examples, let's say, of the former, that would be depopulated areas in border regions, mountainous areas where the local indigenous population was aging, and there were no people to pick fruits or to do certain construction jobs and so on, or to take care of the elderly who were often left without family care and so on. Or in respect to the latter, for example, the deficit I referred to in domestic work caused by the exodus of women from home, usually, of course, from the middle classes and upper classes, that would employ a migrant cleaner or a migrant domestic worker to take care of the household needs. And there you can see that in the second part of the slide that. That the immigrant labor has responded at large to a growing demand, even since the late 80s perhaps, for cheap, low-skilled and flexible work, which was generated mostly from two kinds of employers, let's say. For the most part, it has been the needs of the small and medium-sized enterprise, the predominant company type in the Greek context. We're talking about companies with up to 20 employees maximum, often below 5. In labor-intensive, mostly in labor-intensive activities, active in labor-intensive activities in sectors such as agriculture, construction, manufacturing, or services that require low skills, and to a large extent, not so much, but again important, has been the needs of individuals or households for domestic service and care, house repairs works, an assistant in the family shop, and so on and so forth. Two further characteristics that was perhaps evident in the professions, but is that the migrant labor had showed a clear, and obviously the demand that for migrant work showed, was characterized by a clear differentiation to some extent, at least between male and female work. So. At a large proportion, perhaps around 50%, judging from what the data available tell us, female work, for example, was destined to those domestic or care activities, replacing what traditionally was perceived as women's jobs, to a large degree, while men were mostly, though not at such a large proportion, employed in construction work, for instance. And another characteristic which is again crucial is the large pre-existing to migration, but obviously fed through this informal economic sector, which coincided and went hand in hand with the migrants' irregularity or illegality, based on the way the Greek policy framework developed, which is what I'm going to talk in this slide. The 90s were characterized by a largely laissez-faire approach, in the sense that there was a law in 91, conservative government at the time, short-lived, which made a law for immigration that largely neglected the very reality that the country had been transformed into an immigration country. And to an extent understandable, but just to a small, tiny extent. The previous legal framework was dating back to 1929, so you can imagine how this was not an issue, how unprepared the state apparatus was to confront a situation of massive arrivals, mostly, you know, people coming, arriving by foot from neighboring countries in the beginning of the 90s. So they constructed a legal framework that was very fragmented, and it was very restrictive as well. It was focusing on policing and control, but without actually managing to do much on this either. The very derogative, actually racist term of broom operations pointed to meant at the time was the common term to describe mass police operations of mass arrests and deportations of migrants, and it was seasonal. It related also, these operations usually happen, you know, after fruit picking in a region had the season would finish, or you know, it was seasonal depending on the activity, the activities of work. That's why the sort of curious laissez-faire, the non-policy combined with restrictions. So hundreds of thousands, following this situation and following the porousness of the border, because people who are deported, especially from Albania, Bulgaria, and so on, would come back a few days later from another path through the mountains, left hundreds of thousands people without any opportunity to sort out their status. Since the first regularization program came as late as towards the end of the decade, as 1998. And this obviously registers some, but not all, of the migrants present in the country. What we see from 2000 is a gradual move, shift, trend towards the rationalization of immigration policy, with two subsequent laws, one in 2001 and the second right in the middle of the decade in 2005. Were also just being mentioned in the first law, but given a bit more substance in the second one, referrals to these people are here to stay, so we need to do something about the integration. That was entered in the sort of policy discourse. So, following again after 98, based on this law,